If you cannot hear it already, where are we today?
After our therapy session in Malmö, we are now in London to meet
Mike Lockett, the UK country chair from Uniper.
Yes, we will talk to Mike and pick him up in his office just down the street.
Okay, sounds great. Let's go.
All right. All right, Mike Lockett, our today's guest. Thank you for doing this. And Daniel and I are really excited about asking you a few questions. Would you mind if we use the rainy free time in London and you show us around a little bit?
Rain free time in London. Yeah, let's make the most of it then.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Just got the word from our camera crew that there was actually too much sun in London. Believe it or not,
it happens.
Yes, the reason why you moved to London, I guess,
clearly,
was the weather.
Yeah.
Mike, you are familiar with our format.
Yeah.
We always have an icebreaker question.
Cool.
I met somebody yesterday that almost put me to tears. His name is Erickson Mernat
from
the Birmingham office.
Yeah.
And he gave us the icebreaker question.
Okay.
Basically. So there were a lot of stories he told us.
Now I'm worried. If Eric has given the question, now he knows a lot. So.
Yeah, he knows your whole family because he has been working with your dad and your grandpa, I think.
That's true. Yeah.
Amazing guy. And he just told us to ask you what happened in Portsmouth. Something, a project you were working together?
Oh, Portham.
Sorry, Bob.
Okay. So Eric and I, I should say, worked for many, many years. So he's 55 years in the industry.
Yeah.
My family has always worked in the electricity industry. Yeah. So my grandfather was a fitter.
Yeah.
And Eric trained with him. And then my dad was an engineer. And then when I joined the electricity industry as a graduate, I was put with Eric for a while.
Yeah.
So I used to go, when he was in procurement in the DNO days, we used to go to visit some of the major suppliers, and he would be the key guy negotiating all of these big contracts.
Okay.
And I was looking up to him, literally, and also career-wise as well, to kind of to learn about the industry. He's a really fun guy. So. He can take over a dance floor. He can jump on the keyboards, and he can take over a room as well. We had some fun times, let's say, visiting our suppliers.
Shout out to Ericsson at this point.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's not that we need to break the ice. We've known each other for quite some time. Back then, we were standing in apartments in Düsseldorf together looking for flats. Now we're standing in front of Buckingham Palace, so quite a journey until there. But maybe, I mean, we talk about it most of the time when we meet, about the good old E.ON Energy trading days. You know, you started there, you came over, moved into trading. Eckbert Lege was a big factor there.
Yeah.
Then you took over the position as L1 for power.
Yeah.
UK chair in addition. Can you maybe describe a little bit the whole journey?
Yeah, I was working in the UK business of E.ON at the time, and I wanted a bit of a change. And yeah, you mentioned Eckbert Lege. He took a chance on me, to be fair. I'd not worked in trading before, but he was basically looking for people to come and help him set the trading business up. So I came in 2008 when we met, I came on a one-year project to help establish trading in Düsseldorf. Right. And you can either say that I had the worst ever success rate because 16 years later I was still there setting it up, or actually the truth is I loved it. I loved the people. I liked the setup, and I liked the fact that we were discussing about this 40, 50 nationalities in one building, all trying to create an international business, which I found amazing. So I decided to stay and gradually built up my knowledge over the years. So starting in short-term trading, then the portfolio management a bit broader, and then picking up prop trading as well to the point where when Uniper was formed, I was running the power and carbon trading activity completely. And then when Uniper was formed, we also created a UK business, and that's when I really started as well to take some responsibility for the UK legal entities, and then became the country chair as well to represent the face of Uniper to people in the UK. Yeah. So quite a journey.
Can imagine. Yeah, I mean, and also, of course, family related just plays a role there as well.
Yeah. So my wife and I knew each other from both working at E.ON in the UK, but we both took expat assignments to Düsseldorf, and we got together in Düsseldorf. So it's also kind of the start of my now very important family life. Our first daughter was born there, and we stayed in Düsseldorf till she was around 2 years old. So we have really fond kind of family as well as work connections to Düsseldorf. So it's a really important place for us.
Yeah, good to hear. You know, it's was it definitely a special time for the people that remember it. And
yeah, absolutely.
Great spirit back then.
Yeah.
You just mentioned it, that you assumed the role of country chair and that your role is sort of to present Uniper. But maybe you can elaborate a bit more on that. What is it exactly that you do in your role as country chair?
Yeah, I mean, the headline is, you know, the country chair is to promote the success of Uniper's business in the UK and to make sure that Uniper's strategy, its global strategy, is actually working on the ground and implemented on the ground in the UK. So that's the headline. That's the short answer. In terms of actually what I do day to day, there are three key areas. One is the internal focus, so looking after internal housekeeping, alignment, communication. Then there's the external facing to the market, to government, to regulators, you know, representing a good, positive image of Uniper. And then the third one, which has become more important, and it's the one that I moved back to the UK to make it a full-time focus, is strategy implementation, because Uniper's got a lot of opportunity in the UK. And it will mean a lot of change actually happening in the UK business. So we wanted to have a proper focus on the opportunities that are here in the UK. Just to give some examples of each of those, I mean, the internal one sounds relatively simple and it's a relatively small amount of my time, but you know, doing town halls and speeches and interaction with the team. So making sure that, as in any big organization, comms messages come down from the top and they filter through the organization. In terms of the external, then I think it's just human nature. Our regulators, our government, a lot of these organisations want to talk to somebody senior occasionally. We have brilliant links in to these organisations at operational level, but sometimes the CEO of the regulator Ofgem will want to talk to the heads of energy companies about, for example, cybersecurity or about the way the market's operating. So I take those meetings and represent Uniper in interactions with government and with regulators and with other stakeholders. And that's really important from Uniper's point of view. You know, we've been a relatively quiet organisation in the UK in terms of our image, because we're an upstream player. We don't have a big customer base. And now we're wanting to make that transition into the future, where we want to be known for our investments in decarbonisation. So having to take a bit of a step up, start to promote Uniper a bit more externally. And that then brings me on to the third one, the third part of it, the strategy implementation. So since Uniper was created nearly 10 years ago now, it's been really about our existing operations and making sure that they're reliable and they're running smoothly and compliantly and safely. We're now facing a big shift with strategy implementation to potentially be one of the main markets where Uniper invests for the future in decarbonisation. And again, this point I make about silos and functions looking at what they want to do, you know, we have a renewables team that are focusing on what they want to do in a brilliant way. We have a hydrogen team focusing on what they want to do. We have the existing teams doing their day-to-day. And it only really works if we pull all of that together to focus on the strategy implementation and making sure that we put the right resources into the right areas and prioritise properly. So part of what I do as well is working with all of those people across the UK to make sure we're properly supporting and implementing the Uniper strategy in the UK.
When you talk to the external world, of course, if somebody asks you to be on their panel or whatever, people probably heard about Uniper. But at least I don't know for you, but I run into friends, families that still don't know what Uniper does.
Yeah.
How do you explain it to them, like in a simplified way?
Well, Uniper, I mean, Uniper, you're right, from how we were formed, we don't have an end customer business, neither. We don't have industrial and commercial customers. We don't have domestic customers. So it's not a brand that's well known in the UK. Yeah. It is well known in government and it's very well known with regulators, because actually what we are is a very important provider of reliable, secure energy. And that's what Uniper is in the UK.
Yeah.
So we run six gas-fired power plants. Yeah. We run a fast-churn gas storage facility. We have two high-pressure gas pipelines, and we have around 1,000 people that make all of that work and work reliably and work efficiently. This is really what Uniper stands for currently in the UK. But increasingly, we also stand for increasingly decarbonised forms of reliable energy. And this is where we have some very exciting prospects with the potential investments in the UK business. So we've got our renewable team, the Uniper renewable team. The UK is one of their core markets.
Yeah.
So we're now building our first two solar farms, and we've got, hopefully next year, we'll be starting the first onshore wind construction. At Connah's Quay in North Wales, we're developing a new power plant with carbon capture technology. So a flexible power plant, but with carbon capture. So decarbonized flexible energy, a really important addition to the Uniper portfolio. Our hydrogen team are developing in the Humber region, the Humber Hub project, which is a green hydrogen production facility to help decarbonize a nearby refinery. The storage team are developing Project Salinae. So this is near to our Holford site in Cheshire, where we will take our experience from storing natural gas in salt caverns underground to potentially develop hydrogen storage caverns. Our trading teams are developing, they've got so-called Project George, where they're building on the capability. Rather than handling a relatively small number of large flexible power plants, they'll have to handle in the future thousands of individual renewable projects, contractual projects, as well as our own renewable projects, as well as batteries. So making sure all of that can be handled in the UK portfolio. And our site redevelopment teams are looking at what we can do with some of our former power station sites. So Ratcliffe, for example, and the former Kings North site, which is now a project called Medway One, where we're looking to make that land available for new things like data centres for people that want to come and co-invest on our sites. So the history is really a upstream gas-based business. And we're moving in the future to an increasingly decarbonised business. And this is where the last piece of the jigsaw puzzle comes in. So we want to have more end customers, industrial and commercial or big off-takers, because this is something that's really important from a Uniper point of view, making sure that we produce flexible energy, but then we also sell it on longer term contracts to secure the income for that as well. So this is the last piece of the puzzle with our commercial colleagues in origination and in sales, working with big counterparts and data centres to make sure that Uniper is known in the future as a provider of secure, reliable, flexible but decarbonised energy. And this is the key plan.
And then it comes handy that you have a little bit of commercial knowledge there.
I have some awareness of that from working over the past few years.
Good. Well, thank you very much. Now, maybe we can explain it that way to our family members as well.
I think
it's slightly different in Germany, but I think...
But some of the aspects are true for Germany as well. So, no, that's really good.
It's interesting that people still don't know it. That's always a miracle to me, because I think in Germany, we are much more present also in the press.
It is what it is. Certainly more well known, particularly through the energy crisis. But even before that, Uniper having a large industrial and commercial sales activity, we're one of the largest providers of gas to industry in Germany. The Uniper name was known much more broadly and more widely. We don't have that in the UK, and therefore Uniper really is a name that's known really in the energy industry only. So we like to be known much more from that point of view as providing secure energy supplies.
Let's move a little bit.
Let's keep going.
Yes.
Yeah, Mike, thank you very much for this comprehensive explanation of the UK business. From what you just mentioned, and also, I mean, I'm sort of responsible for the strategy communication. So if you have a look at like the priority project list, one could get the impression that there's quite a lot of UK projects on there.
Yeah.
Can you maybe elaborate a little bit of why that is the case?
Yeah, well, I think the important thing to note is the UK business does fit very well in with Uniper's group strategy. And importantly, the reason why we've got quite a lot of priority projects is it also fits to the UK government's aims and ambitions. And that connection between the two really leads to a lot of opportunity in the UK. We have to then deliver. I mean, it's still a lot of our projects are still in development phase, but there's a lot of opportunity here because of that alignment. And I mean, the starting point is the foundation. The foundation of any strategy for Uniper is the existing business. And I always start there, because if we don't have an existing business that's running reliably, safely, compliantly, and importantly, profitably, then we don't have the money to invest in the future.
Yeah.
And one thing that UK does have is something called a capacity market, which is where essentially our existing assets are paid to be available. So this, from a Uniper strategy point of view, our existing business is profitable in its own right, and importantly has a relatively large proportion of its income that's backed by government. So this is a really good foundation for the financial stability of the Uniper group overall, and of course for the UK business. So that's a great starting point. And then the other element of this is our growth projects for the future. Again, the UK government has recognised and has put in place some really ambitious plans to decarbonise. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the plans, it puts mechanisms to help fund that and help projects come to investment. So our renewables projects in the UK, our renewables team have focused on the UK, partly because the UK government is helping with so-called CFD mechanisms. So these are government-backed contracts that help provide, if you're available and you deliver your project, they help provide you with a guaranteed price for the power you generate. UK government's also progressing carbon capture and storage. Mm-hmm. Again, similar model, where if we build a carbon capture and storage plant, and we plan to do that at Connah's Quay site in North Wales, and also potentially in Killingholme in the Humber, they will help with a subsidy that pays for the difference between essentially a normal unabated gas-fired plant and one with carbon capture and storage. So we end up, again, if we're successful in those projects, we end up with a profitable business, mm-hmm. where a proportion of it is underwritten by or supported by government. Again, we have to deliver and we have to make sure we're there and available, but we get good support for that. So these are all things that kind of come together, where Uniper's vision of a really pragmatic decarbonisation. So yes, renewables are really important, but you have to make sure you've got the flexible energy that's decarbonised as well. UK government recognises that and is really putting a lot of support in place. And perhaps the last point as well, why, you know, UK is also a very important part of the strategy. We're considering things like lifetime extension of our existing assets, even if they're not decarbonised, is because UK government's definition of clean power that they published, they want to get there by 2030, which is really ambitious, but their definition is 95%.
Yeah.
So going from, you know, 75% decarbonised to 100 is really, really expensive. Mm-hmm. Going from 75% decarbonised to 95 is really quite pragmatic. And it means that the last 5%, the gas-fired assets that we have, the gas storage caverns that we have, these are going to be needed, and they'll be supported by UK government going into the future. They accept that although our plants might run less often, they're still very, very important and are needed. And again, they put capacity market mechanisms in place to make sure that those existing assets can have a lifetime extension and can continue to help keep the lights on. So really, a really good fit between UK government ambition and the Uniper strategy, which gives us lots of opportunity here in the UK.
You also talked about the future a little bit and what's out there to happen. Maybe if we look at the sort of near future, what are potential milestones or the next milestones you see for the UK business then?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, in the near future, end of 25 into 2026, it's a really critical time actually for Uniper, and to be fair, for government's ambitions for decarbonisation. It's one of the reasons why I move back to fully focus on this time period, because this is when government are trying to procure things like carbon capture and storage. They're trying to procure industrial hydrogen, for example, our project in the Humber. Mm-hmm. So it's our chance, if you like, it's our opportunity. So by the end of 2026, we will have a much better picture of whether we've been successful with some of these major projects.
Yeah.
We were selected by government at Connah's Quay to be essentially their partner for carbon capture and storage. Mm-hmm. And we now enter into really detailed negotiations with them and with our designers and with our suppliers. Mm. So by 2026, the end of it, we should have a really good picture as to whether we're going ahead with that project or not. Mm-hmm. At the other end of the scale, our existing business, every year we have the auction for the capacity market. Mm. So that's always in Q1. And this really sets the tone in terms of is our existing business going to get good prices for the flexibility it provides. So another key milestone from our existing business is Q1, early March, we'll know whether we've got a good result and whether our assets are in the capacity market. And there's everything in between that spectrum in terms of our renewable projects getting selected and taken through to construction. So we've got, you know, we've got a very busy year ahead, let's say, for Uniper in the UK.
But when you say very important year, if you could make a wish list for next year, at the end of the year, to make it a successful year, what would Mike Lockett's wish list look like for the next year?
So the first thing is, and I keep coming back to it, the foundation. Mm-hmm. So a successful year 2026 is a team based here in the UK that are really motivated and feeling supported in the challenges that we've got ahead, because we've got a big year ahead of us. So the team, the 1,000 or so people in the UK here, if they get to the end of 2026 and feel like they've had a really good year and they're motivated to do the work that they're doing, this is the big, big tick for me. A key part of that foundation is our existing business needs to continue to run really safely, compliantly and profitably, because that's almost our license to operate. That's what Uniper's reputation is built on. If we don't get that right, then we don't get the money into the business, yes, but also we kind of lose that credibility as a really reliable partner for secure energy. So the other part of a successful 2026 is to continue doing what we've done over the past years and make sure that with all of these new initiatives and ideas coming on top, we don't take our eye off the ball and we don't lose focus on the core part of our activity. So gas storage, pipeline operation, running power stations reliably is really, really, really key. And then, it would be great at 2026. I mean, I'm also realistic. We can't win every single project and every single tender that we enter, but having at least one major decarbonisation investment, if we've got our renewable projects really up and running and new ones in construction, and importantly as well, that we've got some major customers who are also sharing in the Uniper vision that we are really the people to come to for secure, reliable energy that can be decarbonised in the future. So partnerships, for example, with data centres or major industrial customers that share the same view about the future of Uniper, that would be a really really big success for 2026. And this is what we're working together in the country council to try and achieve, and in the UK exec team to really try and make sure that we're supporting the business to push that forward.
Good deal. Well, it's going to be a busy year then.
Definitely. Very busy year.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we make sure that all of the kids behind us know something about Uniper.
So. Yeah, we have to make sure that happens as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good deal.
All right.
Mike, thank you very much for having us here in London and in the office as well. It was a really, really good time, and we hope we could show a little bit more about the UK and what you do as a UK chair. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All of the years, it's always great talking to you.
No, it's a pleasure. Really good to talk to you, and great discussion. Thanks for coming to learn a bit more about the UK business. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having us.
Was a hard decision, right?
No, not at all, actually. No.
Good deal.
Right, we're getting a black cab back now. You haven't been in one yet. We have to go.
Okay, let's do that.